What up? Welcome to another episode of New Orleans.basketball, New Orleans.network podcast. As always, I'm your host, Raphael Radler, joined by my fellow middle brother, Garrett Jerome Radler. What's poppin' with you, bro?
What up, bro? Everything's all good on this side. I woke up this morning. It was cold outside. So, yeah, there's Louisiana weather in a nutshell for you. But everything's all good, man. Getting these playoffs started. The WNBA draft is mm-hmm. over. I will be in Vegas to see Chicago, the Chicago Sky, and they'll play the Aces. But yeah, man, playoffs is here, so that means we're getting towards the end of basketball season, although we do get Olympic basketball, so I'm looking forward to that. But it means we're getting towards the end of the NBA season, and man, Home teams was getting after it this season in this playoffs early. So, man, it looks like it's gonna be some good matchups, some blowouts. But I think that's more of, you know, first game and everybody kind of feeling each other out. And some teams just happen to pull away. Not so much the Celtics and the Heat, but like other series on that. And man, you know, I think you know, as we get into this playoff talk about the Pels, man. You know, you can look at the Pels played hard, so you can look at all of the reasons what might have would have gone into the Pels playing hard. But I'm gonna give the credit to Spitter, man. This is a Spitter stand account. Love me some currency. Love how he represents the city. So it was good to see the Pels and Spitter. They've been having this jet life kind of partnership going all season. He's kind of been the Drake for New Orleans as far as the Raptors, like the ambassador for the Raptors. Spitter has taken on that mantra for the Pelicans. So it was good to see that video, that mashup. Had me ready to run through a wall mm-hmm. hearing Spitter talk about the city and things like that. So, man, it was cool. But how's everything on your side, man?
Yeah, everything is blessed. It's good to be at this part of the year where you don't have to guess no more. You don't have to wonder no more. The games are played and the decisions are made. So, let's get into it. Before we jump on that Pelicans game, make sure you guys are following us on Twitter, on X, on IG, on TikTok. That's NO Basketball, no E. Make sure you're liking the episode below. Make sure you're liking, making sure you're commenting. Again, all the feedback we can have is things that we welcome because it's fun to chop it up with y'all. It's fun to kind of get different perspectives and get different comments. So make sure you guys leave us there. But let's jump into it. So this was a game where the odds in Vegas were like very similar to the Celtics and Heat odds, where the Thunder were favored by 8.5 points. The team is coming off a win versus the Kings, but like a deflating win kind of because you lost the two before that and Zion goes down and things like that. And so the Pelicans, in typical Pelican fashion on the road, come out in the first quarter fighting. It is a dogfest in the first quarter. Nobody can make a shot. It's sloppy on both sides. You kind of expect some of that from OKC because they weren't really playing toward the end. Now, obviously, they got the first round seed, but they weren't playing hard competition. Like, the Mavericks set their entire team. Right. And then they get some time off with the play-in. So they're well rested. And it's their first time in the play. You kind of expected some of the rust to come down. And so as the game went on, I think the overall sentiment where people are like waiting for the Thunder to make that run at home, right? That wherever good team makes that run, puts some separation between them and the opponent and wins the game. Where every time OKC did that, the Pelicans punched right back. And so the game, I think, the most OKC led by was 10. The most the Pels led by was 7. It was a back and forth. It was really the best game of the week in terms of the game one games in terms of just it being equally matched for most of the game. And again, it was ugly. Like, let me not lie to you. People will say, oh, it's playoff basketball. You're not supposed to score and stuff like that. But, like, a lot of it was just, like, missed shots. And a lot of it was just ISO basketball that just didn't look fluid. So, tell me what you saw from this game. Obviously, we'll talk about the ending and the Pels dropping this one, 92-94. But from start to finish, what were kind of the things that jumped out to you?
Yeah, man. Yeah, this was a hell of a game. It was funny because, you know, you listen to – you turn on the game. First of all, I did not know that Bally Sports was covering the game until like right before the game started. So I switched over to Bally because, you know, who doesn't want to listen to Joel and AD? And I listened to Joel AD's show today on SiriusXM while I was driving around doing some things. And I heard him talk about the atmosphere in OKC, right? And how for this particular iteration of the Thunder, with them being so young and this is their first opportunity to be in the playoffs and then to be the number one seed, like you have a target on your back. And the atmosphere, the way the crowd in OKC, because they're the only, like AD said, they're the only show in town. It felt like a ruckus, you know, like a college energy almost, where like it looked like the Cameron Crazies, right? They had the all white in the background and they're right on top of you. They name their building Loud City. They kind of pour into that kind of personality of, you know, it's us against the world. We're loud. And things like that. Small market, things like
they
that.
They bark. Yeah.
Right. Yes. They bark. But I think that atmosphere kind of got to OKC a little bit. I mean, this is a big moment for them. And you can see like everybody on their roster outside of Jalen Williams, because he's obviously incredible. Everybody looked a little rattled and shook. And so early in this game, you saw nerves. And as much as like the Pelicans have played in a playoff series, but like they're a young and inexperienced team outside of CJ and JV, you know, and they're learning on the fly as well. And so everybody was a little shook and a little rattled. But the Pelicans hung in there tough, right? They played their level of defense. They featured JV and they allowed him to not be like Chet hit that first shot at the beginning of the game. And you knew that Chet was going to be effective. He's going to be effective this entire season because he presents that switch and out there at the 3-point line kind of threat for the center. But you know, if Chet is going to be effective, you have to make him pay on the defensive side of the ball when he's guarding JV, because he's just not. He's a little light in the ass when they come to guarding JV. And so they feature JV. They allowed him to kind of bang and put that kind of physical beating on Chet. And I tweeted about it in the first quarter. Even when he missed a shot, I said, listen, you have to continue feeding him because it's going to pay off later in the game with tiredness, with just being abused on the block over and over, with the double teams, with, you know, it just, what if it pays off later? And you saw it pay dividends later until they made the switch to Larry. And Larry played well. Like, Larry had played well. He was in a dunker spot. He was being athletic. He was, you know, contesting those wide-open alley-oops at the rim as well. And so you saw a lot of things from a lot of different people. And I think the Pelicans defended well enough to win this game, right? The offensive side of the ball is where the issue comes for the Pelicans, because with CJ and kind of in this mired in this kind of a slump, right? He BI and JV and to an extent, obviously Trey are your offense. Well, if you're not going to play JV at big minutes, right? And you know, and Trey is doing what he's doing, but CJ and BI have to be the guys stirring this pot. And if they're not going to do it, and listen, we'll talk about the physicality put on Brandon Ingram and some of the calls and things like that. But man, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And it's what, again, one of my favorite lines from Star Wars is like, only a Sith deals in absolutes. And what I mean by that is, listen, the physicality can be a thing. The fouls, the non-calls, those can be a thing. And that can be a factor. But at the same time, like, Brandon Ingram is a max contract player looking to get max himself out. Heavy is the head that wears the crown, and both things can be true. And he just has to find a way to get through at some of these times and play through this and score. And you heard him kind of in that post game talk about it. But the fourth quarter, you get to the fourth quarter, and the game is close. And again, you know, a lot of the demons that the Pelicans were, you know, have been facing all season, they came back to rear their ugly heads very loudly. in the fourth quarter, starting with your O-N. Like I tweeted, way too many going into the fourth quarter without the lead, right? And so you go into the fourth quarter without the lead, you're expecting much of the most, but the Pelicans fought. They continued to fight, and they were leading in the fourth quarter. And then the clutch time demon, it has been a problem all season. And just because the playoffs start, you know, you don't flip a switch, right? Unless you're like the 2023 Miami Heat, who couldn't hit a shot at a three-point line all regular season last season, got into the playoffs, and it became the number one shooting three-point team in the playoffs. That very rarely happens. And so you knew going into this series that if the game was close and the game was in the fourth quarter of a tight game, that Shea is a clutch player. He's an MVP player. Like, he is the guy that brings the Thunder home, and he's been a great closer all season. So you saw that rear its ugly head, and it doesn't help when the refs when they ref it up, right, and change the way that they've been calling the game all game long. And of course, it seems as though the Pelicans are always on the wrong end of some of these calls. And again, I never like to blame referees. They have some of the hardest jobs in the world with so much on the line, especially now with sports betting and stuff. You care about some of what the players get. I imagine the refs get some of it too as well. But at the same time, like, there's just some calls that are just egregious, and it just seems as though the Pels are on the other side of it. But I think they played, they defended well enough. And I think if one of the two, somebody has to join the party with Trey and with JV and those guys. And, you know, obviously if you're missing shots and you go with this more defensive leaning, lineup that Willie has just been trusting all season long, and it's paid him dividends, right? He's in the playoffs. But at times, like we always talk about, when the offense is ugly, it is ugly. And you saw it in game one with the substitutions of guys who just could not hit shots when they were called upon, whether they were open, whether they were contested. And so you saw the game kind of slip away in the fourth quarter as they came back and made their move. But again, they got it close. You get this call at the end on CJ. That was just a gut punch. And I think that kind of, you know, obviously you had all the turnovers in the fourth quarter and things like that leading up to it. But I think the foul on CJ was the gut punch, because it was Shea getting an and one. CJ obviously didn't feel like he fouled him, whatever the case is, whatever. And I think that was the gut punch. But if CJ hits a shot, that final shot, which we got to talk about the final play of the game and how bad, you know, the call is and the execution of it was. Just to have CJ go one-on-one and B.I. not touch the ball, JV, Trey, nobody who was doing anything touch the ball, was bad. But, you know, outside of that, I think the Pels played well. They defended well. If they can just have somebody show up offensively for them, then I think that they win that game. But it's sometimes it's not about when. I mean, what the injuries are, it's about when they happen. And we always talked about how long it takes B.I. to get back into a rhythm. It's his first game back, was the last game of the season from an injury. We all know, if you check his history, it takes him a while to get up and going. It just so happens that it sucks that it's the last game of the season, and here you are in the playoffs. So I think you see some of that with B.I. But, you know, I think it's going to be a tight series moving forward. And obviously there were things in particular that game that we're going to talk about. But overall, I think the Pels defended well to win that game. But the offense and the execution-laden games obviously came back to rear their ugly heads.
Yeah. A lot there. So let's start with the hero ball. From early in the game, you could tell that, like, B.I. and CJ kind of had it on their mind. Like, Lu Dort was in B.I.'s jersey. You could tell, you know, the physicality was bothering him. And this isn't the first time. Like, if you remember the Timberwolves game a couple years ago, where B.I. Ant kind of revved it up a little bit and it shut B.I. down, and the Pelicans ended up not making the playoffs that year. Like this has shown itself before. Now, I do think Brendan Ingram's done a better job in the recent games of responding to the physicality. But to your point, he's not really in a rhythm. Like, even in the play-in closeout game of Sacramento, like, he wasn't scoring at the clip that B.I. scored. He just played a good all-around game. He's still not in the rhythm. And so he's going to have to get in one. But you could tell early in the game, it was like a mano-a-mano versus the Thunder versus Pelicans. And you saw it kind of from CJ's end as well, where this is the playoffs and this is the time where you got to make a bucket versus like the fluidity in the offense like didn't exist. It looked like a lot of guys were just kind of standing around and like, here, B.I., go score. Or here, CJ, go score. And we're just going to wait at the three-point line. And so I think when you're playing a good team, especially good defensive team like OKC is, you've got to do more off ball and create more opportunities for everyone else. Like, yeah, they got almost 40 threes up, but like there was more opportunities for drives. There was more opportunities for people to attack the basket that they just didn't take because they were waiting for B.I. or CJ to bail them out. Now, you mentioned the Najee and Jose struggles. We've talked about this all season long. There's going to be games where Najee Jose can win you a game, and there's going to be games where you should probably try to figure out if there's another option that's better for you. Now, a game like yesterday where no one can make a shot and really people are daring the non-shooter, even the Pelicans were doing to the Thunder too, daring the non-shooters to shoot. How much does it hurt that like Matt Ryan and Jordan Hawkins haven't been worked into this? Because like, mind you, Casey Wallace, who's also a rookie on the Thunder, made the game-saving defensive possession on CJ McCollum, because he's been integrated into the lineup all season long. That's not the first example. Last year, Christian Brown on the Nuggets all season long was worked into the rotation to the point where you're confident. We talked about last season how Kyrie and Jackson were just kind of thrown in there in the play-in game, like, oh, go save the season. Well, now, like, in game one, I understand it's one game, but like, is there some pain or some like residual effects of not having those guys ready, right? Basically, because now if you throw them in there, you gotta hope that now something tells me those two players would not hesitate to shoot, but you gotta hope that they're in rhythm and they're going in. So like, if you don't play them, it's like, okay, we get it, they're not in rhythm, but don't you kind of wish that you could?
Yeah, there was a couple of possessions in that second quarter, especially where the way that OKC is defending is that they're collapsing, they're doubling JV, and they're collapsing on Brandon Ingram the second he can get a half a slither inch around, you know, Lou Dort or whatever. So he's seeing bodies, and there's just you watch the game. And listen, I understand Jordan Hawkins' defensive liability, that his when everybody thinks that he's a defensive liability, and I get that he might get attacked and things like that. But there were, if you're watching the game, you see some of these kickouts to the corners, and you're like, man, if like for 3 minutes, if that's Hawk, and he takes three of those threes, and he makes one of them, as opposed to brick after brick after brick. And then you just feel like he could do a little something. Same thing with Matt Ryan. At least Matt Ryan is 6'7". And listen, OKC played 11 guys yesterday, okay? Mm-hmm. They went down the roster, right? You saw Gordon Hayward. You saw Kenny Hustle. Like, you saw this is how they play the game, right? They empower people to come in. And regardless of the things that you're not good at, Mark Degano doesn't play to that. He empowers what you are good at, right? And he puts, you know, Isaiah Joe in spots where he's catching and shooting. He puts, you know, Kenny Hustle, you know, on playing defense and allowing him to rebound and bring the ball up and get the offense going. Yeah, those guys are not great. You know, Kendrick Williams is not a great shooter, or Isaiah Joe is not a great defender. But the things that they're good at, he's allowing them to go out and contribute. Casey Wallace, like you said, a rookie, going out there getting a stop on the last play of the game. Jalen Williams, I know people look at him and he plays like a fifth or sixth or seventh year player. Jalen Williams is a sophomore. He was a rookie last season. He is a rookie, a sophomore this season. the reason he is where he is now is because of the experience. What do we always say? The best way to get better at basketball is to play basketball. And having those guys incorporated throughout the season, yeah, the playoffs might be a big, big, big stage in life for them. But they are, at least they have – they understand their roles. They understand their positions. They understand how they can contribute to the game. And you're not so reliant on – Shea has to score every single point, or Jalen Williams has to score every single point. Isaiah Joe can come give you two or three threes. Kenrich Williams can come give you a three. Kayson Wallace can give you two threes. And all of those points add up. And so when you have guys on the floor who are proven shooters, right? Matt Ryan showed you that he doesn't need a lot of space and a lot of minutes to affect the game. And Jordan Hawkins has irrational confidence, and obviously, you know, his shot wasn't perfect coming into the, you know, throughout the season, but at least he was willing to take those shots. And I would venture to say that he would make more than he would miss in these games. You know, you never know how that affects a guy. But again, had he been playing all season, this may not have been a really big stage for him, and he might have not had that stage fright. So I do think you're paying a cost, because we said it in our pre-series episode. You're gonna need firepower in this series. You're not gonna be able to stop Shea every single time. You're not gonna be able to stop Jalen Williams every single time. You're not gonna be able to do it. And so sometimes you're gonna need that firepower for a good spurt to keep that game close. Right? We saw it in the third quarter. OKC came out, the threes started they started making their shots and started making their threes, and the lead went from a tie game to 59-50 quick. And so you have to be able to match that firepower at a certain time. You are not going to be able to stop everybody every single time. Sometimes your best defense is to come back and score as you can. And so I do think, you know, the Pelicans are paying a cost not having other guys who can give you a certain skill set. Jordan Hawkins is not going to change the trajectory of a game, although he might, but like, he's not the game changer guy, but he can come in and give you a couple threes. Like, you know, he can do that. Same thing with Matt Ryan. And when you're struggling the way they are, the Pelicans were, like, you have to be able to say, okay, well, this is not working. Let's try something else for a short period of time and just see if it'll work. I think there were times where Chet wasn't on the floor, and Jalen Williams, big Jalen Williams, Arkansas, shout out to the Razorbacks and John Calipari. That Jalen Williams was playing the five, right, being out there as a big man. You could get away with Larry Nance and then maybe Matt Ryan at the four, because Jalen Williams is not, you know, Larry Nance was dominant in the paint and in the board. He can get some of those kickout threes to Matt Ryan instead of it being Najee and Jose who were not making shots. So I think they are paying a price right now. And it's going to be incumbent upon Willie and James Borrego to figure out, Casey Hill, to figure out, okay, if these guys, you know, aren't making catch and shoot threes, you know, how else can we generate offense? Because both teams scored under 100, and you're not going to be able to do that every single game.
Right. The main reason why they were in the game at all is because, again, going into the series, the one thing, even without Zion, that the Pelicans had in their favor was size, right? Now, experience and size, it all kind of comes together. They're a young team, so they're a small team. They haven't grown into their bodies. Like, it all comes together. And so the only way the Pelicans were going to have a shot in the series is if they played like the older brother, right? And you saw that physicality. You saw it on the board. The only bad stat you can find for the Thunder is that they're 27th in second check points allowed. The Pelicans had 24 second chance points in this game to 11. I see somebody in the comments talking about JB's 20 rebounds. Like, they were getting so many rebounds, not because, again, the Thunder weren't trying. And to your point, Mark Dagano says, hey, we're willing to give something up. Like, if we're going to get out in transition, we're going to run. We're not going to be good on the boards. Well, that's the area that the Pelicans were good at, and that's why they were close in that game. The other thing, you brought up Jalen Williams. And while he's a better scorer, and I think he's further along in terms of shot creation, then that's what you need, especially next to Shea. You need another option. Man, listen, the things Trey Murphy was doing throughout that game as it progressed, not just the shooting, but the second chance points and him getting the boards and going up aggressive. I thought toward the end of the game, they should have been looking for Trey. B.I. didn't have it going. CJ had it going. The only two people who really had it going were Trey and JV for the most part. And so I think that there needs to be another level there. Like, everyone's looking at Jay Will's game, and you wake up and you look at the news or you look at social media, and you're like, damn, Jay Will outperformed whoever else was on the court. Trey had 21 points. He outscored him, right? And it was on similar shot. And so I think that there's another level to Trey without Zion that some of the shot attempts need to kind of lean his way. Now, you talk about the late game execution. It was terrible. Multiple possessions where there's turnovers. Again, the last possession, no movement, just CJ ISO for the game winner, I guess. It's not like he had it going all game. I just think that you could have gotten into something better. There was a possession earlier everyone's talking about where the Pelicans had four offensive rebounds and all of them were just random. Oh, I'm going to shoot the three versus let's go get a shot or attack the rim, where there could have been a timeout used.
The B.I. one was just egregious.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I'm not shooting real fast. There's not 14 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, there was just a lot of that, again, has plagued this team all season long. But I do think there is a lot of things that they can take with them, right? Like, you won the rebounding battle, which you have to do versus this team. If you lose the rebounding battle for this team, you probably got blown out by a lot of points, because that means they did everything they did well and do the things that you do well better than you. That doesn't leave a whole lot for you to be successful at. The defensive intensity, you mentioned it. There was, 12 seconds that went on in the third quarter, where I remember Trey Murphy missed an assignment. He went under a pick. Somebody got an easy two. Willie Green called a timeout. Those are the type of timeouts, which, again, I wish you would have called the last one. But those are the time of timeouts that you need in the playoffs. 12 seconds into the half, this is not going to cut it, right? Talk to Trey. Trey comes out, makes a play on the defensive end. He was all over the floor, getting loose balls, things like that. You have to set the tone. That's a non-negotiable if you want to make this a series. But something that I think that they need to do more of, that, again, some of it's a balance. OKC is a high-paced team, and that's how they get momentum. That's how they get those runs on you. But there were too many opportunities where the Pelicans were in transition and they weren't attacking enough. I know CJ talks about the lack of fouls call and B.I. with the lack of fouls call. The Pelicans only shot 9. I mean, OKC only shot 13. So it wasn't like everyone shot free throws. But there were times in transition where the Pelicans have 6'8". We just talk about the size advantage. The Pelicans have the size advantage. You need to force the issue at the rim and either convert at the basket, or you need to make them call something on that end. There's just too many opportunities. The Pelicans outscored OKC in transition and points off turnover, but I think that is an area that they didn't do more of. When they get the rebound and they got the numbers, they need to push it, because you need to create as many easy buckets and easy opportunities as you can for such a good defensive team. So game one is in the books. Again, you talked about the importance of game one and how going there and stealing that one and putting them on notice was so important. Well, after game one and how it kind of transpired, I tend to disagree. I tend to think game two is more important, and this is why. Game one is like, okay, you might have caught them off guard, or they were rusty, or this is their first time in the lights. But if you go out in game two and you do it again, and you make everyone kind of think, okay, well, they came to compete even without Zion on the road, and if you're able to steal game two, I think that's almost more impactful, because most people would say, oh, if the Pelicans got game one, it's okay if they don't get game two. Well, now it's like it's a must-have, and both teams are kind of fighting for it. I think this is the more important of the road games to have. So going into game two, what are some of the adjustments you're looking to see from this Pelicans team?
Well, first and foremost, I think one of the things that is really not plaguing the Pelicans, but something that they're dealing with on the side is Herb Jones and his serious regression to the mean from the three-point line. And when I say it's plaguing the team or it's affecting the team, there was a play in that fourth quarter. One of the turnovers in the fourth quarter was a drive and kick out to Herb Jones. Well, where Herb is supposed to catch it and shoot, he's in such a slump that the three-point shot, he's like, he is giving up on it. Not giving up on it because he still shoots him, but he doesn't have the same faith in it that he did when he was rolling in the middle of the season. And so he cut to the basket, and ball went out of bounds because somebody thought the whoever it was
passing. B.I., ball, I remember.
I think it was B.I. The ball went out of bounds. He has to contribute on the offensive end. And so one of the adjustments has got to be get Herb in transition, because if he isn't going, he's very not his role on the Pelicans as far as how the Thunder are guarding him. The Thunder's guarding him is very similar to how the Pels guard Josh Giddey, right? Like if somebody is going to shoot the ball, let it be Herb Jones, right? We're not going to have it on. It can't be CJ, can't be BI, can't be Trey Murphy. JV is not out there as much as he needs to. So we'll just let Herb shoot. And so Herb has to let it fly. And if he's not going to let it fly, then you have to get his offense from somewhere else, because the Thunder have shown you that they're not going to let BI be the guy to do it. And so he's going to have to fight like hell in order to get his points the way he's accustomed to getting them. And so Herb has to, he's starting, right? And he's the fifth starter. And so he has to contribute, right? He can't just be out there for defense, because then you become a liability on the offensive end, and you go into these ruts where you can't score. And then secondly, JV has to be, he was featured yesterday's game. He has to be featured more. He has to, because he is the most gravitational pull right now is JV on the floor, because they have guys who, right, you can stick Lu Dort on BI and, you know, be okay for a couple of possessions where he's guarding him alone. There is no, you can put this guy on JV. There is none of that. And so JV has to be featured more, and he has to be strong with the ball when he's underneath the rim and finish some of these bunnies that he was missing. But he has to be aggressive, and you have to keep feeding him the ball, because he is the guy that's going to get the defensive rotation and things like that. And then lastly, CJ has to get more shots. I mean, not CJ. Trey, I'm sorry. No, he doesn't. Trey Murphy has to get more shots. Excuse me. I don't think nobody needs to tell CJ he needs to get more shots. I think he can do that by himself. Trey Murphy has to get more shots. He is I know that, you know, he is, you know, BI and CJ, and the JV is obviously the mismatch, like we say, feed that. But Trey is if you're going to get Enigma Trey, right, this version of Trey Murphy that you got, he is your second best offensive weapon if Brandon Ingram is going to get taken out, by Lu Dort and things. So he has to be featured more. I think that there should be some more Trey Murphy pick and pops. There needs to be some more Trey Murphy with the ball in his hand, right? And yesterday in game one, there were a couple of times where Trey came off the picks, and he's timid. He's not looking to go and attack and either at the rim or pull up, man. You 6'10", no, 6'9", however tall you are, like pull up and shoot that if they're hitting the drop coverage on you. Or even if they got one of those smaller guys on the switch, pull up and hit the shot. But he has to have more aggression, and he has to get more shots, because he's going to be the guy that opens up some of that defensive set for the Thunder, because Chet is at the rim causing all kind of havoc. He had 5 blocks yesterday, but he had about 7 or 8. Like, I'm not shooting the ball because Chet is here, or I'm looking around and missed a shot because I'm anticipating Chet coming over. And so I think that Trey has to be the guy to get more shots. He and JV have to be featured more, and the hero ball just has to stop. It cannot be. You're not going to beat this team. This team, like you said, finished the regular season top 5 in offense and defense for a reason. They are really good. They are sound. They play on a string, and they are connected, right? They have a bunch of guys who have good basketball IQ, especially on the defensive end. So the dribble, hezzy, tween, pull up, That's not going to happen with this team very often. You might catch them once or twice, but you're not going to be able to beat this team doing that. And so get the ball moving again. You saw some good paint to great offense with the Pelicans getting into the paint and kicking out for the shooters. But the hero ball, this is not the series for that, right? You remember B.I. versus Phoenix and the way he was able to play and move freely, because that team was slight, right? They were very slight. If they put Devin Booker on him, or if they put Mikal Bridges on him, those guys aren't really big enough to knock Brandon Ingram off of his rhythm. Well, Lu Dort is a freaking tank. And so if he's crashing into you and bumping into you, you're not going to be able to get off those hezzies and things like that. And we saw, you know, CJ, when he gets into his bag, there are things that he could do. But Cason Wallace is not having that. Jalen Williams is not – they are not having that. And so you have to move the ball, get other guys involved, and let the game come to you, because there's going to be opportunities for for B.I. and CJ to do the things that they need to do. But if they're forcing it and it's taking away from where you could get advantages or at other places, it's more hurtful to the team than helpful.
Right. I would agree with that. I couldn't agree more with the JB point. Again, there's times, even when Brandon Ingram and CJ are on the court, I still think you should throw it to JB, because that forces them to do something versus everyone standing around and do one-on-one. It forces some type of defensive move. So I couldn't agree with you more there. Here's where I disagree with you. Listen, Lu Dort is a phenomenal defender. Brandon Ingram is in a contract extension year. If Lu Dort is the reason why you are not performing in the playoffs, that is a red flag for the Pelicans going into this summer. So in terms of, and he talks about it, hey, let him do it. Said it in the post game after. He's like, I'm adjusting to the physicality. So you need to see it. Listen, at the end of the day, yes, everyone needs to move the ball more. It can't just be ISO one-on-one. Like, that's not how the Pelicans have played all season. You shouldn't start doing that now. But there is a difference between having the guy in the series and not. And with Zion not being there, B.I. has to be the guy. So it can't be a one-on-one battle versus Lu Dort. He's got to do what it takes to put his team in position to win, whether that's scoring, whether that's getting other people involved, whether that's using the fact that he's being face guarded to draw foul, or whether that's just going to the damn rim and going past Lu Dort, who's 3 inches shorter than you, and finishing at the rim. B.I. needs to take it upon himself to will his team, just like he did in that same Phoenix series that you mentioned, with also great defenders. Now, here's where I think the biggest, shift I think needs to be for this Pelicans team. The Pelicans team has to win the bench, because the knock on OKC is that, yes, they have Jalen Williams, but that's a little bit different than Shea. So when Shea sits down, can you win those minutes where it's J-Dub versus Trey or CJ or JV or Common? The bench has to win. Whether it's Najee, whether it's Jose, whether it's Larry, whether it's Dyson, I doubt it's going to be Hawk or Matt Ryan at this point. Willie Green cannot let the team go possession after possession with not getting good looks. You've got to find the right matchups and be willing to pull guys when stuff is not working. Dyson didn't play in the first half. Dyson came in the second half, made a defensive impact. Got the Pelicans through a run. Like, you've got to be able to find that stuff quicker and not let Najee and Jose go 2 for 7 apiece, right? Like, you've got to be able to do some more things on the fly, because if not, you're going to be looking at 0-2 in the face. So, game's not till Wednesday. Again, another day in between. The Pelicans have a lot in terms of to be confident in going into game 2. But it's going to be on them to determine, can they hit more open shots? Can they pass the ball more freely? Can they attack and be just as aggressive in game 2? What you got left for the people as we go through a, I don't want to say do or die, but a very important game 2 for the Pelicans versus Thunder?
Yeah, you never know what people are going through, so give someone a smile today. It is definitely a very important game, because coming back down 0-2, it's – like you said, the bet is there that is likely to happen. But for the Pelicans to come back to New Orleans down 0-2, and they haven't been playing their best ball at home, I think that you want to try to avoid that as much as possible. And the Pelicans have the opportunity to do it, right? Like, this, the crazy thing about, you know, this Western Conference this year is that the Pels are an 8 seed and OKC is a 1 seed. But there's not a lot of difference between, like, the wins and losses, right? Like, this isn't Celtics Heat where they're just not in the same stratosphere. Like, these teams are, like, really closely matched. And maybe having Shea and not having Zion is the difference. But the Pelicans have the ability to make this a series and to win game two. And so this is an opportunity for them to go into to on this road, you know, back on the road and tie this series up, bring it back home where you have the pressure is all on the one seed at that point. And so you can take one here and you can go in and get this win and then come out and come back home feeling better about yourself and where you are in the standings. And you got to put the referees to the side. You can't come out, you know, and feel a type of way and try to play a type of way. Put that to the side. The calls are done. The offensive fouls are done. Adjust to the calls and play the game that you play. And I, like I said, the Pels have the horses and the mismatches to muck this game up and to win the game. They just have to hit a couple of more shots. And I think, you know, hearing B.I. talk after the game, I think he's going to figure out a way to kind of do what he has to do to figure out this Lou Dor problem, because it has to be, like you said, B.I. coming through for his team and doing what he's best at, and that's putting buckets on the board. So with that being said, follow myself at Garrett_Rattler. Follow my brother at Raphael_Rattler. Follow the page at NOBasketballNoE. That's on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you get your social media. Appreciate everybody for coming through and giving us your comments. We see them in the on the side over here. Thanks so much for making the live shows, and we'll see you guys next time. Hey, Vinod.